Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. This week, I sit down in Culver City with Katie O'Brien, an actress you may have seen in some Marvel films and even in the Star Wars universe. She's going to talk about how martial arts plays into all of that for her. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Art Lifestyle Podcast, and today I've got a very interesting person, as I always have interesting people, but I like to make everyone feel special in their interestingness, but this young lady is someone I've been looking forward to interviewing for a little while, and fortunately was able to sort of reconnect with her a few weeks ago. She's actually quite a busy personality. It's Katie O'Brien. Some of you may know her from the Marvel Universe. Some of you may know her from the Mandalorian Universe or the Star Wars Universe now. What's the other big universe I've seen you in? The zombie universe. Yeah. So you've been on quite a few things. She's an actress and a martial artist, and we'll just find out a little bit more about her. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming out after what sounded like quite a big day that you had yesterday doing some stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. I always think that I'm going to be really free, and then I just like, my days just fill up. It's insane.
I don't think there's a such thing in the entertainment industry as being free, unless you are absolutely between something and you go, I am going to another hemisphere.
Right.
Yeah.
Before that's vacation. What I should have done.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I should have done. I still have to do my honeymoon. It's been like 2 years.
Man. So you got married 2 years ago.
Yes.
And you still haven't even done a honeymoon yet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, part of that was COVID. Everything was closed down. We wanted to go to Japan. So it was, it's a whole thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you guys still planning to go to Japan?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
It's open now, so we can actually like make some plans.
All right. Let me make a connection with you.
Great.
With someone there.
Sweet.
Especially if you're going to go to Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
And a really wonderful person to be back around here in May. He's actually going to take, I think, Timmy B's sticks and drop his logo on him as well. And we're going to see some big stuff over there. But he's connected to the Minnesota Kali Group. So he's got a big operation over there with like thousands of students. It's basically like, it's called Rhythbox. So it's basically like a Taibo-ish kind of thing, but it's huge over there, huge.
Fun.
So it'd be a good connection. Always good to know someone, you know, when you travel. So.
Yeah.
Let me make that connection to you there.
You know, the best places to eat, locals.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what we need.
Absolutely. Well, shoot, there's a lot to talk to you about. So why don't we just start, where are you from originally?
I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Ah, okay, you're a Midwesterner.
Yes.
All right, that explains, because Katie's kind of always been one of these people. I think when I first met you, she just has that cool vibe to her, and she insisted to me today that she's not a cool person. I kind of disagree. All right, I guess cool is a matter of taste. She's my kind of cool anyway. So I think I get that. I get the Midwest vibe. I grew up in Illinois myself.
Oh,
so,
yeah, nice. We're neighbors. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Born here in California, but grew up there. And I think Californians, actually native Californians of my age group, tend to be a lot like Midwesterners anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool thing. Well, that's cool. Okay, so you're from Indianapolis. So now, which came first for you, acting or martial arts?
Interesting. I was going to say martial arts because my dad signed me up for karate when I was 5, but my mom had signed me up for acting classes, I think even before that.
Oh, wow.
I was in like, as like a little baby, it was kind of more, you know, imagination at the time, but I was probably doing both kind of around the same time.
Oh, wow. So what was mom's purpose with that? Was it just for fun or was there like some serious aspirations at the time?
I think when I was in preschool, I immediately would just like kind of go off on my own and start, you know, putting on costumes and performing. So my teacher at the time told her that she thought I would be an actress, and I think she just kind of wanted to nurture that. And then I wound up getting picked on in kindergarten. So my dad's side of things was, okay, I'm going to sign you up for karate. So
okay.
It's kind of like the
you can't act your way out of it. You can maybe fight your way out of it.
Right. And that's, my dad was an all-state wrestler, semi-pro football player. So like athletics was something that we were able to bond with. So he joined with us, and eventually our school kind of moved. So we stopped for a while, but he actually wound up running into somebody from our old dojo recently, within the last year, and decided to start taking it back up. So at almost 70 years old, he's going for his black belt in karate, and I'm really proud of him, really excited for it.
Now that is awesome. Yeah. I like the idea of the reconnection. There's something really kind of important about, especially some of those first teachers you had, and especially if they were influential.
Yeah.
I've definitely reconnected to my first, not only my first sort of main martial art teacher, who was a karate teacher, but it was a school that had different disciplines in it. And it didn't operate like in Asantos does now, where you pay one price and take a bunch of different classes. Mm-hmm. You would have to pay each instructor individually. Mm-hmm. And as a 12-year-old, I didn't really have that kind of money. But the kickboxing class there was a fighter's class, so a lot of those people sort of merged and melded together and bonded, and so I got to know a lot of the different instructors and their students, and so I'm also very close to the guy that was the kung fu teacher at that original school, and we've been working on getting me back there to do a seminar for them for about a year. So that's gonna happen. It's just a matter of, you know, finding the right schedule and all that kind of thing. So, but those people are really important.
It is, it is like if you find the right school, you find a really good school that's nurturing and is positive and everything you do, you get a social network, you get friend groups, you know, you find good connections that way. And it's exciting to see, you know, he's in retirement and was kind of like, you know, looking for some new friends, and now he has them. And I found that through martial arts my whole life as well, and it's a lot of the reason I was able to like survive in LA when I first got here, and have some jobs, you know, something to do was through my martial arts connections and friends. So,
right.
It's like a really, when you find the right community, it's a really great connection.
For sure. Now, I'm not sure, we're in lav mics. We're kind of hanging out here in a backyard in Culver City. I'm not sure if you guys hear this heavy breather that's here. This is not a stalker fan.
It's not Katie. Me either. This is,
it's not Katie. It's not me. This is, Bo, the Frenchie, who's hanging out with us here, he's playing a little bit. So if you're hearing some strange jingling and heavy breathing, that's that's the dog.
Hey, buddy. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I got to give him some credit. So what was so it was karate, right, that you started in?
Yes.
And you said you were 5?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty young. And have you been just at it, martial arts, consistently since age 5 then?
Pretty much. We would still train. I wound up getting my brown belt in karate. And then I did take a short break in mostly high school, where I did music. It was like my main focus. So
I
was on the drum line. I played marimba. And that was a huge influence for me. And then I also did like this theater. So I got to kind of experience the other artistic side, I guess. I did speech and debate team, all of that. So I did that, and then when I went to college at Indiana University, they have a really good martial arts program.
That explains where you know Paul McCarthy from. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm making all the connect, because I met Katie actually through our mutual friend Paul McCarthy. Now I get it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it had an amazing Hapkido program and self-defense, and then I got my black belt in that, and while you were training for your black belt, they allowed you to pretty much go to any martial arts class for free, you know, just go check them all out. So I was able to take capoeira, I was able to take Brazilian jiu-jitsu, judo, just like try all these different styles out, which was so cool.
Yeah, no doubt. Did you know Adam Rector when you were there? Okay, so I interviewed Adam probably about 4 shows ago.
Nice.
Four shows ago, I think at this point, maybe.
Nice.
3 or 4, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we were talking a little bit about, we'll jump around a little bit here, I'm sure. But I was having him talk about sort of the differences. He did an internship a summer out here with Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So I was having him kind of compare, I'm not, you know, bad or good or anything like that, but just kind of compare, say, the martial art program at UCLA in Indiana, because these are things that I went to the University of Miami, and I'm mm-hmm. used to there being a couple of clubs. There was an Aikido class. I taught a Muay Thai class, actually, at the Wellness Center while I was there. And there was, I think, a Shotokan club, and there was something else. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, all universities probably have one or two. Yeah, that is not Indiana. No. That is not UCLA. This is like a dozen or more, like 20, you know, different martial arts. This is an incredible thing.
Yeah, it's like a really, I think Indiana University had one of the best martial arts programs outside West Point Military Academy.
Wow.
So one of the things I think that allowed it to stand out was you were able to take school credit for the martial arts classes.
Oh, right.
So you had to show up. Mm-hmm. Versus like other schools where it's kind of an after school thing or, you know, extracurricular or whatever. So if you don't show up one day, you know, you don't get dinged for it or something.
Right.
Which is fine. I mean, that's how, you know, your typical class operates. But, you know, as a teacher coming from both sides of it, because I taught the Hapkido Club at Indiana University and I taught Hapkido at UCLA, it is easier to teach students who are there for a grade because they actually show up to class, so you can kind of work with the schedule and kind of keep everyone on track and everyone's on the same page. You don't have to spend half the class catching someone up, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I was so excited to be part of that program, and I think that was really pivotal in making martial arts like a lifelong thing.
Yeah. I think when I get the subscription magazine launched, I want to do an in-depth piece on both universities and their programs, because I think it's even harder to describe it, I think, you know, in just a quick interview anyway, which we don't want to make the show about those programs, but they are incredible. And if you are anywhere around, because I believe UCLA is open to public, right? Other people can come in and take the class,
they
too?
They can, yeah. There's a whole, it's a little more expensive to do it that way, but I mean, it is you know, if you want to train in pretty much everything, it's a one-stop shop, and that's pretty hard to find.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, talk about a mixed martial art facility.
Yeah.
And is Indiana the same as it? Can people from the outside come in and take, or is it just generally only credit?
I don't actually know.
That's true. Yeah. Plus, you haven't been there for a while, so you could talk about what it was like maybe when you were there. But
I'm so old.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I don't even want to... I don't even want to ask because it's probably not comparative to me. I'm going to guess you were probably born after I was out of high school,
which
we won't even talk about. That. Makes me feel older than my back tells me I am. Okay, so you started, what kind of karate was it that you started? It's
Shorei Gojiru.
Gojiru, okay, so in Okinawan. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And then from there, it sounds like you found Hapkido.
Yes. Yeah. And it was... like Shorei Gojiru, I'm kind of grateful for because I was kind of a wild child.
Uh-huh.
It was like impulse control or something. I don't know what was going on with
this
me.
This never happens in actors. I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. But like I would, you know, if someone left their keys in the car at 2 years old, 3 years old, four, I was going to take the car.
Okay.
So I crashed.
Did you ever do that? This sounds like a good story. Okay.
Oh, yes. I don't know what it was. My grandma, she would just leave the keys in the car. She'd be like, don't drive, and sure enough she'd get out and I'd be like, all right,
it was,
well, that's
the don't drive
cue.
Part
it yeah was it was probably that if she hadn't mentioned it, I might not have noticed, and I was like, it's time for me to drive. So once I took the car, I crashed into a tree. Another time I took it and dragged her behind me, I guess. Apparently I don't obviously
wow don't how old were you again part.
I was probably 3 years so
3 years three
yeah
wow.
If you told me not to do it, I would do it. Like my mom had, she was taking a call, I wanted a glass of water, she's like, just wait. It was on our glass table, so I climbed on the glass table, fell through, 100 stitches.
Damn!
Yeah, like,
jeez.
I was an insane child, so taking karate actually helped me get a lot of discipline, because we had to stand still, and we had to, you know, address our sensei, we had to bow, we had to have, you know, the formality and kind of the military aspect of it, because it was a really formal school. And then going to Hapkido at UCLA, it was a little more relaxed. I mean, we still had some of that structure, but it's fellow students or kind of recently graduated people teaching, or, you know, they had also, you know, adults or whatever. And then once I came out to California, I really kind of got more into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which was like, the complete opposite, just super relaxed. Like, there's almost no, some of the schools that I've trained in, it's just that there's almost no, like, formality at all. Just as laid back as it gets. So it's kind of been good for me to go from, like, the super strict discipline, because I was, like, really, really rigid, but it allowed me to, you know, to focus on things and set schedules and goals, and I think it really gave me that ability.
Yeah.
And then to gradually learn to ease up.
Right.
And relax and be more fluid and you know, go with the tide, I guess.
Right. Well, that's probably a pretty good order. I mean, I did the same thing. I was in a more traditional martial art first, and then to this more eclectic. I mean, which is something like Muay Thai still has a, you know, a strong formality to it, but you know, some of the other things we do less so. But yeah, I can imagine. I think it would have been hard to do something like JKD, Kali, without some sort of discipline already in there, because it does kind of go A to X back to H to, you know, this, and unless you can sort of discipline yourself to, I'd say rep out and pay attention and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the traditional martial arts certainly helped with that.
Yeah, and you get frustrated too with certain things. Like Kali, you know, it's a lot of patterns, but it's also, I mean, there's so many variables going on at the same time.
Right.
And I kind of attribute, you know, playing drum set.
Oh, yeah,
to
yeah.
being able to kind of like pick up the patterns a little bit, but then I have to add the footwork in, and you add a lot of stuff. And yeah, if you kind of maybe don't have that discipline early on, you or realize what it takes to be able to build and start from scratch and build up, you might get frustrated and quit early. But yeah, I mean, I think it's all, it's especially, you know, in Asanto Academy, you've got history there.
Right.
So you do learn that historical component to it. Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this style? Why did this style develop? You know, where is it, where did it develop and why? But then you also have the huge, like, you know, international crew. Everybody comes in and it kind of brings their own little thing to it too. And then it's also, I never felt, at least, and I was only there for a short time, but I never felt that it was like, I was going to get like push-ups or whatever for doing, you know, for like being, not that I'm unruly, but it was just, it was relaxed. But at the same time, you know, I think everybody was there for the same purpose, which is to learn.
I think the worst thing I've ever seen, well, okay. There was Legends Camp. I remember one time Ajahn Chai, cause I'm always there filming these things, right?
Yeah.
I remember Ajahn Chai, when we still had tape, had me roll a tape back a few minutes so he could look at it, because he was pretty sure someone did not salute to the and sure enough they didn't, and man, they got some push-ups. That was probably the strongest one I saw. And then did you meet Sifu Atticus at the academy?
Yes.
So he has twice in his class given two different adult men timeouts.
Oh my gosh. Wait, why? That's so, like, kind of more embarrassing than anything else, I think.
That's why I found it funny.
Put your head down.
And he didn't quite say it exactly like that, but it was just like one guy who we were just doing takedown. Takedown, get up, rep it out, right? And this guy would wrestle every time you'd take him down. He'd fight you, and you're like, let me go, dude, so I can get. And I think Atticus had told him probably two times, and then we hit the third time, the guy was still wrestling. He goes, you, go sit down over there. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of looking, and class goes on. I'm like, wait a second, he just gave that adult man a timeout.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to laugh, because I'm just like, that's kind of funny. And the guy was sitting there sort of like, you know, sulking.
Yeah.
I just got a timeout. And I remember telling the story to a couple of guys when we were sitting in and out, because this guy was a visiting student, and he'd come back again, and he came into the in and out, and he said hi, and he left. And I said, that right there is the only adult person I've ever seen given a timeout by Sifu Atticus. And one of the guys sitting with us raises his hand with a smile on his face. He goes, I got one too. Nice. I said, what? Why would you admit to that?
Nice. But that's so important, though, because that shows that, like, he's paying attention, and he's concerned about the safety of his class and everything.
Yeah.
And I've gone to schools where, you know, that's not the case. And even if I know how to take a fall or something, if we weren't working on falls, and you're going with someone who's new, you could seriously hurt somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, it's so annoying for me when instructors don't pay attention and don't seem to really care about the safety of their class and their students.
I mean, I don't know much about this big case that just happened down in San Diego, so I can't really comment it, but we know something. It was like a student got hurt in a jiu-jitsu thing, I think it was 2018, and he just got like a $40 million settlement.
Think
on
he put
it.
Like pile drive him or something and broke
his I saw the quick video someone had posted it the other day, and he didn't pile drive him. It was like they were both on the ground, and I think the one guy was, the student was attempting like a roll out of something, and then the instructor ended up on his back, and it did give him some spinal compression, and he's, I don't know if he's a quadriplegic now, paraplegic or something, but again, you know, just disclaimer here, I don't know enough about the story, and I'm not really talking one way or the other than what Katie and I are kind of talking about, which is, you know, it's just important to be safe when we train.
Or you can't.
You know? I mean, exactly. Because, I mean, it's training. It's one thing, you know, you enter a competition and you understand there's a risk.
Right.
But, you know, when you are just training, even when you're sparring and training, you're going, I want to come out of this with, you know, every limb working, all my teeth, both eyes, you know.
I had a teacher once say you can't play with your toys if you break them.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
If you break your partner, then it's
Yeah, and you know, I've said this over and over, and I've written an article to the effect of it about your training partner being your best resource. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get better because of your training partners, which kind of relates a little bit to what you were talking about, teaching classes at university and people showing up and not. You know, it's hard to get better as a group if the parts keep interchanging and you're repeating, okay, here's how you throw a basic punch over and over again, and there's no progression. But, yeah, I mean, there shouldn't be something that's so important about winning in a class that you're going to injure somebody else. And again, I'm not inferring that that's what happened in that situation because I don't know. But
that does happen. You know,
but it does
people
happen.
People are so concerned about, oh, I have to tap this person out or I have to get the first hit or whatever. And it's like, why? Like, you're not getting prize money for this. Like, we're just training.
right. Yeah, and some of it, you know, maybe just kind of. And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons, as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Katie O'Brien. Coming up next week, we get a software engineer and Shudo practitioner and expert, Harlan Hugh. Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also, click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack Alrelic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.